Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 649 for comics originally released on January 15th, 2020. Now, starting us off in DC is Aquaman number 56. This is one of the, really the only issue I've pre-ordered of Aquaman since I dropped off the book when he was getting amnesia.
Yeah, you dropped off a long time ago, and I almost did, but I've been reading it the entire time, and it was rough going for a while, but it's been getting a little bit better recently.
Okay, now this is a different creative team than usual?
Yeah, completely different. It's been Kelly Sue DeConnick who's been writing the book, and I don't know if this fill-in, because it seems like it really breaks up the story flow of what's been going on, is because she can't keep up with the book, or they wanted to look at this before they're going into the Aqua, I'm not going to say it because I don't want to spoil it, but what's going on in the current book?
Well, it seemed like this was a good done-in-one story, but also something that felt like it thematically might fit in with that bigger sense of what's going on.
Yeah, it fits in. It's kind of weird because like that was kind of talked about before, and now they're going to this look back in time, and so it's just odd. Like I said, maybe they wanted to throw this out there for some reason to kind of build up for that, but... Or like I said, maybe she's just having a time crunch or something came up.
It seemed like it was a fill-in issue kind of a plan, which is not a bad thing to do. And I think for that sort of approach, this felt like it was good.
Yeah, I know what you mean by that.
I mean, part of what had me interested in sampling this was, one, I'd gotten off Aquaman. But more than that, this was a done-in-one story in the creative team.
Yeah, because you like Kyle Higgins from over on Power Rangers, right?
Power Rangers and some other stuff he's done. And Aaron Lopresti, I've been a fan of his artwork for a long time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I did enjoy the artwork in here. He did a good job.
Yeah, I think Lopresti is really just a sensational artist. I don't think he gets enough credit and stuff. And he's one of those that at some point, he's going to be one of those breakout, you know, top tier artists, I think.
Yeah, it's going to happen eventually. He usually does a really good job.
Yeah. This is one where it was set back in time, but I couldn't tell exactly when.
Yeah, there's no reference because it just says years ago at the beginning. But I don't know how many years ago. I don't remember this anywhere in the Aquaman I've been reading. So somewhere, I don't know
well,
where.
It referenced Justice League Volume 1, The Extinction Machines. I don't know which volume of Justice League that was, and there have been a few. This almost feels like it might have been early in the new 52 run.
That's why it feels so weird to me, because it doesn't feel like anything I've seen.
So I'm not sure. It's sometime after the Trench was introduced, which I thought was early in the run, but I could be mixing up the new 52 and the Rebirth runs also.
Well, I'm trying to, my memory is horrible, but I don't think we've seen the Trench really in the comics up until now, for me, in Rebirth.
Okay, so then it's the new 52 then, because we absolutely saw them before.
Okay, because for me, I'm like, oh, they're popping up here out of the blue. But all right, so that makes sense. It's going way back.
Yeah, well, way back's a relative thing, because there are things that what's going on in the bigger picture of Aquaman and stuff harken back to like the 70s, maybe the 60s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's one of those things where it was, again, I felt the... referencing a trade ambiguously, given how often they renumber volumes of comics and then, how many Justice League Volume 1 trades there have been, it didn't anchor me in any point in time specifically, other than I think it's early New 52.
Okay, so I guess they're taking us back to this point to talk about the event, which it's so hard to talk about, without spoiling stuff, but I think they kind of spoiled it in the solicits.
If you want to mention it, that's fine.
Okay, the whole Aqua Baby thing. There's
yeah.
Gonna be a kid.
And again, that's something that has happened in the past. Again, going back to either the 60s or the 70s. I forget when the first Aqua Baby type stuff had happened. And this is laying the groundwork of them, Mira and Aquaman, talking about do they want to have kids.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, this basic plot line, I don't say this story, but this plot line could have happened. Really, they could have picked any point in Aquaman's history.
Yeah, I'm imagining they had a conversation like this at some point. The one thing that made me kind of laugh in here is, you know, I know people might look at it and say, what Mara's reaction when they start talking about kids, how mm-hmm. that may be kind of weird, or well, she shouldn't react like that. No, I've seen it firsthand. A lot of women get very offended. I've seen it when you start trying to, even some men, you know, push children upon them.
Well, when it comes down to people assuming the only reason for marriage is to procreate and further the human race or something like that, it's like, come on. I would like to think there's more to life than just, can we, you know, keep the planet populated?
Yeah, maybe you enjoy each other's company and you like doing things together. Who knows?
Who knows? What a crazy idea.
Yeah.
This day and age, I can see where nobody would really think of that first.
That's true.
Which is sad.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
What I liked is this story was not mired in continuity. It didn't really matter exactly when it happened.
Correct.
And that was nice, you know?
It was nice. It felt like an easy done-in-one. You know, with it fitting in here, it was just odd that they put it here for me just with the flow of the story. But it didn't read bad. It was well-written. And we don't get stories like this enough where it's a story beginning, middle, end with a comic today. So they're so rare from the big two to have one come out. You're like, oh, this is enjoyable. This is something different.
Well, it's surprising how rare it is because it's a good thing to do, I think, between longer arcs.
Yeah.
Because it allows you to slot in a creative team. And again, I think Kyle Higgins and Aaron Lopresti worked well together on this. And it's easier to get them for an issue than, you know, a 6-issue arc or something.
Yeah, I think something like this could work at the big two, similar to what a lot of the Image creators do, where they take the 2-month hiatus. Instead of having the 2-month or 1-month hiatus, just bring in a different team for a one-off. It doesn't really break the flow of anything. It's something that references what's going on, but it's not. It gives the writing crew or the existing team that's set there time to maybe take a breather, take a break, because just continual work day in, day out, they need to have a break every now and then. Otherwise, you burn the team out.
Well, and I think if you do it between arcs versus kind of interrupting something, as we've seen on various titles in the past, it works better. And also, it allows you to, if you want to do a flashback story like they did here, to kind of remind people of what had happened before or tell something that hadn't actually happened before but that we need for the next story or something, you can use it to jog the memory and to set things up.
Yeah, I agree. It did flesh out what, you know, the past of these characters if you didn't read it, which the only frame of reference I have is probably about 12 issues of Peter David when he wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rebirth stuff. So, yeah, I don't have a lot of Mara, you know, and Aquaman back history. So this was nice.
Well, and Peter David would be another interesting kind of fill-in issue writer at some point.
Oh, I agree. I like Peter David so much when he was writing the Hulk that when he left, I was so upset mm-hmm. that I started reading Aquaman for like, it was like 12 or 15 issues. And then I shipped off into the army, I think it was.
If Peter David were to do one, I would have it focus probably on Vulko and Atlantis.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
I don't know exactly what about that, but it seems like that would be kind of playing to his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I could see him writing that. And I would read it because most anything Peter David writes, I'm down for.
Yeah, and he had just a terrific run on Aquaman for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. But this one was kind of nice. It was, you know, they have the Event Horizon thing going on. And that, I guess, was to create the conflict and set the scene of where this conflict's going to come in. And it was kind of cool. But, you know, it's not going to really interrupt anything. It's not a major groundbreaking thing. It's not something that's going to have an impact on the story years from now. But it was just a fun read. That's light, gives a little bit of context, and you can appreciate it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like when they do these smaller stories. It gives a chance to kind of, like you was saying earlier, you know, sample it, get your feet wet or whatever, figuratively speaking. The problem of using this sort of a thing as a sampler issue is, of course, it's not the regular creative team.
Exactly. If I would not say this is a good jumping on point, although this is a good new reader, easy reading for them, it's not something you'd want to jump in on because you'd read this and then you see that last page where it's saying, hey, next issue, and you'd be like, wow, this is a huge jump in time. What is this, like years in the future? But no, they haven't been reading the entire series. If they jumped in here, they'll be a little bit confused.
Yeah, if you didn't realize this was a flashback and thought this is where the story's starting, and now suddenly it's like they talked about kids, let's jump to them, you know, about to give birth or something like that. It's like, that's bizarre.
Yeah, what's going on here?
You know, so I knew, you know, that this was going to be a bit disconnected and stuff. I liked it, but it's not enough for me to get back on the title, but it's enough for me to try out the title again if I see a good jumping back on point.
I would agree with you there. I almost called it quits. There's a lot of titles that I have been dropping because I just needed to cut back, and I've been very judicious with what I'm adding back on. And this is one of the ones that almost made the cut, but I continue to buy it because it started getting better recently. But I would tell you, it's not, and I hate to say this, it's not, it doesn't give me that feeling that it's a must read. Mm-hmm. It's just more entertaining than it was. And I hated that Amnesia thing because they were doing that at the same time with Nightwing.
Yeah.
And well, I was just like, okay, I'm done with this.
I quit this one out of spite, not out of actually really having, I think I read the first issue with the Amnesia and said, you know, okay, I don't need to continue with this.
Yeah.
But it was more sight unseen than anything else.
Yeah, when I say recently, probably in the last, I'm guesstimating 4 months ago, got his, you know, memory back. And so stuff's been happening. But it was kind of weird, you know, anytime a new writer takes over, you know, they have to have this reset point for them. And I don't really think that's a good thing to do. Maybe you just pick up and write your story, just pivot off that. If you're a good enough writer, I think you can pick up where the last person left off without having to erase the memory of the character to do what you want to do.
I agree. And I think you should be able to pivot from what's going on and not give a reader whiplash with a huge about face or something.
Yeah. And too many readers do that. So that's unfortunate, but it's kind of where we are in today's writing world at DC, Marvel, and independents, all of them.
Well, it's what this really underscored for me is we've all got that concept of a jumping on point and a jumping off point. But what they really, I think, particularly at DC and Marvel, more so at DC, need to be figuring out is identifying issues that are good jumping back on points.
Yeah, I would agree. Because now the Amnesia thing would probably be a bad example, but let's say Kelly Sue took over and they literally could just hype it up. Hey, you know, welcome to DC, Kelly Sue DeConnick, taking an all new direction, you know, hyping it up. This is a great jumping on point for new readers. And you might see a blip. You might see something because we've seen that in the past when they had the long 400 or 500 issue runs, when a new creative team would come in, people would jump onto the title. And I think people might still do that, but they've almost trained the reader to wait for the relaunch.
Well, I think the problem is when you do something like a new writer and stuff, you've got a jumping on point, which is targeted to new readers, but it's not so much targeted to lapsed readers.
Yeah, very true.
And that's where I think they need to target both differently. There are times where you want to go in that bold new direction, get those new readers and stuff. And if you can get it to where you've got them and you think you've got a lock on them, and then do a jumping back on point to get the people who were alienated by that or something like that, there might be a way to have the best of both worlds. They just don't seem to be going down that path.
I would agree. It seems like they go more the, we need to get new readers in here, and they just take for granted that you or I or a long-term reader of Aquaman will be okay with the new direction. And that's not always the case.
No, definitely not. And I think it's decreasingly so. There are some people that are still, you know, all in and will be probably till the day they die. But literally, those numbers are dropping off and dying off in a very real sense.
Yeah, versus new readers. It's kind of sad, but true. It's a morbid statistic in our hobby.
It is. And I think, you know, it doesn't matter how many people you can get to sample a book if they're not going to stick with it.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So, but overall, a done in one. If you're not reading Aquaman, this is not the issue that's going to get you back on. And if you're already reading Aquaman, it's a weird pause to set some stuff up. Or if you're just coming back in like you, it wasn't enough to hook you. So maybe forgettable.
Yeah, but I think it's good to say that. If you want just an issue of Aquaman to read.
Yeah, I would say that. If you just want to try it out and just go in and read it, it's not a bad read.
And who knows, maybe this is, you know, Kyle Higgins and Aaron Lopresti, you know, getting a turn at bat as potential replacements as the next creative team down the line.
Hey, and if they want to do that, I'm on board for these two.
If they were to do it with these two, I'd hop on the title again.
Yeah, see? There you go.
For me, this was a solid B. It was good. Like I said, because it was a different creative team than usual, it wasn't enough to get me back on the book, but it is enough to get this a little bit more on my radar than the title had been.
Yeah, I gave it a B-. It wasn't that it was bad or anything. It's definitely above average book. It's just, for me, it just felt weird because they paused it where they're already leading up to the Aqua Baby thing. Then they had this flashback. I'm like, well, they took away the momentum from the story, and they're like, hey, we're coming back. So I just I just didn't like that. It was a little bit weird if you're reading the title continually, but it wasn't bad.
No, I can totally understand that. And I think that's one of the differences between reading a book continuously and just sampling or bouncing on and off titles.
Exactly.
Shall we move over to our Marvel book?
Let's do that.
This is Iron Man 2020 number one. Now, I have been a fan of this character since he was originally introduced back in, I want to say, the 80s.
Oh, okay.
This is a bit of a different take because back then he was in the far future of the year 2020.
Yeah.
And the year 2020 seemed much further away back then.
And now we're here.
Now we're here. Exactly.
And you're reading it 40 years later.
Yes. It is a bit surreal. There were some aspects of this that I liked, a few others where it's like, where are they going with this? I've been reading the Iron Man title that had just ended that got replaced by this. With the replacement, as they are wont to do with Iron Man titles when they flip them out, they've replaced Who's Iron Man?
Yeah.
So now we've got Arno in place of Tony. We all saw that coming. To me, the minute they had introduced Arno a few years back, it's like, we've got 2020 coming up. He was Iron Man 2020. Gosh, I wonder if they're going to go there. And sure enough, they did.
Yeah, you almost have to, right?
Yeah, kind of. What was weird is what they've done in the previous arc and stuff in that other title to bring back a few other characters that are here in the early scene almost as prisoners.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's a bit of a dark take.
Very dark.
It fits with what's happened with the character before, because while Tony Stark is not something or someone everybody loved, he was an ostensibly likable guy. Arno, not so much.
I would agree.
He's always been aggressive, a bit of a jerk, and just a kind of a bull in a china shop kind of a thing.
Yeah, I kind of always hated Arno. I never enjoyed the character.
I think part of what was fun back in the 80s is he was so much of just a damn the torpedoes full speed ahead kind of a guy, what would kind of the antithesis of Iron Man.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Very much an anti-hero, but now he's being used as the hero, which again, a little weird, but I see where they're going and why they're doing that. There were some really cool moments in this, the whole robot uprising sort of a thing.
Yeah, all the AIs breaking out.
Yeah, including some that I'm surprised, particularly when we see the LMDs early on.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised with that too.
I want to know, to me, somebody's behind this having upgraded them and giving them sentience that they didn't have before.
Yeah, because you never saw the LMDs having full intelligence, so something has happened here to give them that ability.
Yeah, and they may just play it, oh, well, they've evolved naturally.
Yeah.
I don't buy that.
Now, I can't remember way back to the 80s, but was that the armor that he had in 2020?
With
the big gears?
Yeah.
Okay, I was just like, I don't care for it.
It's not exactly it, but it's very stylistically the same.
Okay, yeah, it looks like something you'd see from back then.
Both the gears for the shoulder type things and the almost more Ultron kind of mask design.
Yeah, it does look like Ultron, I would agree.
But something that's, again, a bit more aggressive.
Yeah, very much so. Almost like he could be a villain when the full mask is on, before the face mask comes up. But yeah, he almost looks like he'd be a villain there.
Well, and he was, because he was kind of, what if the Iron Man legacy went wrong?
Yeah, there he is.
I say that not having read those stories since the 80s, so I may be misremembering.
Yeah.
But I liked all this stuff. The introduction of the 13th floor was fun.
I would agree with you there. It's kind of like zany that would happen, but at the same time kind of cool. And then they had a interesting little reveal in there, which I was like, at first I'm like, who's that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wondering where they were going with some of that stuff, and just the cameos we saw there, I thought were a lot of fun.
Yeah, because you get a lot of the characters that you don't see a lot. You see, like, what's his, Herbie from Fantastic Four, mm-hmm. and a lot of the other robots. I can't remember their names, honestly.
Some of them I could, some of them not so much, but most of the major AI robotic characters...
are all there.
They seem to be there, yeah, including a few I wouldn't have expected.
Exactly, yeah.
Sentinel or two, it's like, really?
Yep.
So, I thought it was fun. This is kind of kicking off the whole 2020 story arc, or whatever, milestone story, whatever you want to call it, that I'm actually, I think, all in for on that. I'm getting at least a lot of them, if not all of them.
Yeah, I'm on for the main title. I don't think I bought the little spinoffs in that one, but I like you, I've been reading Iron Man since Slott has written it. And, you know, I think Slott does a better Fantastic Four than he does in Iron Man. But at the same time, it's a completely different take because he hasn't been really writing Iron Man. He's been writing the Iron Man character, but with Arno, and just completely different. So, you know, I almost see this could be a setup for bringing him back. I don't know.
I think so. This is one where I think Slott's taken kind of an ensemble approach, much as he had done over in Spider-Man and a few other places. And Tony Stark's been kind of pushed to the background, and there's some justification for that. I'm not sure it's always the wisest move. I'm not sure it's worked out the best here.
Yeah.
Bringing Arno to the forefront absolutely makes sense. But I'm wondering where they're going with this whole AI uprising, and is it going to be something that is squelched in a few months and just forgotten about after that, or is it a pivotal turning point for the Marvel Universe? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. We need to get that old title Avengers AI to come and stick up for the good guys.
I would expect a lot of those characters to show up if they haven't already.
Me too. I'm trying to remember exactly who was in the team, but I remember quite a few of them. But yeah, I'm thinking we're going to see a few more characters show up in this story.
Well, it was Vision. It was...
Vision. And I'm trying to remember who...
one of the Doombots.
Yep. It was kind of a weird title. I remember reading it, and... it was one of the ones that was not like one of my favorites, but it was enjoyable.
Well, it was really a bunch of, you know, third, fourth rate type characters for the most part.
Hank Pym was the leader. I just pulled it up. Doombots, yeah. Monica Chang, Victor Mancha. That's Victor Mancha. I forgot him. Vision.
Yeah, from Runaways.
Alexis the Protector. So those were the main characters. I don't even remember Alexis the Protector, but those were the main ones. And I remember reading it.
Yeah. I would expect many of them to kind of just show up here and stuff at some point. Again, it's a question of, is this something that has ramifications outside of these titles or not?
Yeah, I almost see this almost like a big thing. It's one, they're remembering what happened back in the 1980s, looking forward to 2020, and they're kind of tipping their hat and a nod to their history, which is good. You got to do stuff like that. You can't just say, hey, here we are in 2020, we wrote a story for 2020. Let's forget it. Let's just skip that. Mm-hmm. So they're tipping their hat to that, and they're doing it with the character that was back then, which is kind of cool. And I think what they're going to do is they've been setting this up for probably the last year to build up towards this 2020 mini event. And then outside of this, like I said, I could honestly, not saying this because I'm not spoiling it, we don't know, see maybe a return of Tony Stark after this.
I would almost think so.
Yeah, and that's what I'm really excited for, because I've been missing Tony, so I want to see him again. Other than, you know, that we've been seeing him as the AI in the suit. I don't want to see the AI. I want to see Tony.
Well, I liked how they had a timeline in the thing of both what happened with Arno and what happened with Tony.
Yeah, I agree. That was really cool.
Because it's very much these two are at odds, and we'll see what happens coming out. I mean, they could come out of this with Tony coming back. They could come out with Arno being Iron Man for a year or two. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know which way direction they're going to take it, but that's just my hopes, you know, keeping my fingers crossed.
At some point, Tony will be back. That's a given.
You have to. I mean, he's not in the movies anymore, but still, you have to.
Well, and if they decide to you know, go with Arno, that could be a way to transition, you know, happens in the movies, too.
Very true. Oh, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, very true.
You know, play him either as the long-lost brother or cousin or something like that. There's a number of things you could do.
Yeah. But you know what? I kind of like Dan Slott as a writer. Like I said, his comedy works better in Fantastic Four, and it works better in Spider-Man than it does here. But he hasn't been doing a bad job. It's just his voice is not really like a typical Iron Man voice, I'd say.
I agree. There's a bit of a roller coaster freewheeling kind of aspect to it versus a bit more of a methodical, planned, almost engineered storytelling.
Yeah, which is more what we're historically used to, I would say.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I'm looking forward to this kind of, you know, quasi-event or whatever. Not expecting it to be the world's greatest, but I expect it to be entertaining.
That's exactly where I am.
You know, there were parts of this that I thought were a little fast and loose, but I am kind of expecting that from Slott, and I'm okay with that. So I'm going to go with a B-plus on this, and like I said, I'm in for, I think, every part of this, you know, Iron Man 2020 arc.
By the way, I applaud you for that. I'm kind of happy to see you reading a little bit more.
Well, you know, the Machine Man stuff was pretty easy to do. Rescue, that was easy. Force Works, I'm curious what they're going to do with those characters. And it's not like there's that many side titles.
It wasn't overblown. I think there was two or three of them, and they were each like a couple issues or three issues, something like that.
Yeah, two or three issues each. So it'll add maybe a dozen comics to my reading or whatever. It's not that bad.
Yeah, and you'll be done with it in a couple months by the time the big summer event comes out, Empire, you know, if you want to read that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, with me, normally I'm the more generous person. I'm a little less generous today. I gave it a B. Like I said, not bad. I enjoyed it. I think it is a decent read. If you haven't been reading Iron Man, this is probably not something you want to jump into because it's been referencing everything we've been reading over the last, you know, 8 months probably. But it's been entertaining, and if you are reading Iron Man, I think you'll enjoy this. And what I'm interested to see is what happens on the tail end of it, because I'm keeping my fingers crossed that something kind of cool will come out of it.
If you go to the checklist, can you clarify something for me? I was, I think, originally misreading two of the items.
Okay.
That's not Wolverine number 1 and 2, that's I Wolverine number 1 and 2.
Oh yeah, I Wolverine. Huh.
I hadn't caught that at first.
And that hasn't been solicited as far as I know. Maybe that'll be in the next previews.
Probably. And all that right, may be the robotic replacement Wolverine or something like that. I don't know. Or maybe it's a new Apple product.
Well, not to spoil this too much, but I did notice there is a character in there that looks like an I Wolverine on the 13th floor.
Well, again, that was one from one of the Wolverine titles back in the day where it was like a robotic replacement.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So maybe that's going to be the I Wolverine. Who knows?
That's what I would expect. I don't know. Kind of weird.
Yeah, and maybe I'll pick that one up because I'm a Wolverine fan, so we'll see.
Yeah, I was thinking it's going to tie into Wolverine, and I was thinking there's that character, but then I looked at that again, and it's like, that's not what I read. Interesting.
Hi, Wolverine.
Hi, Wolverine, yeah. So, we'll see.
Cool.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes, we shall.
Now, this is Undiscovered Country number 3 from Image. This is one that I had not been reading before we decided to review it. I was able to read the first two issues.
Cool.
I'll admit the concept of walling off America isn't as fictional as I'd like it to be.
Yeah, it's kind of uncanny with what we see.
Well, and it's also one where aspects of this kind of concept I've seen elsewhere.
Yeah.
Everything from on the last ship, they were walling off sections of the country at one point in that show, to, you know, various cities and comics having been walled off, whatever. I mean, it's not like a brand new idea. But there's aspects of it where, man, they sell the concept pretty well.
Yeah.
The initial two-page splash in that first issue where we see the wall and all the armaments on it and stuff like that, it's like, okay, that's cool. That was a strong visual and really set the scene early and well.
Yeah, that really kind of hooked me. I was like, wow, this is really cool. I like that.
I thought it was a strong first issue, really got the thing off the ground. It was a solid second issue.
Yeah.
But coming out of that, before reading this third one, there were aspects of the USA as almost a Mad Max kind of crazy sci-fi dystopic future, which isn't something I really care for, but they pulled it off.
I would agree with you, because that's the exact feeling I got. I felt like I was reading like the Road Warrior or Mad Max in a comic inside the United States. I was like, wow, this got really zany. But like you said, they did pull it off, and then they regrounded a little bit here, I think, in this issue.
Well, yeah, because the other thing I was having a hard time with at the end of the first and second issue was all this radical change had happened in like 30 years.
Yeah.
And they addressed that this issue.
Finally, because I was wondering, I was like, okay, you got this whole world. I can't remember what's called, the virus that's spreading all over the world.
Yeah, whatever that virus is, the sky virus or something.
Sky virus that rains down on people and people get sick. And the U.S. kind of walls itself off. But then when you get there, you see so much change. You're like, how did this happen in just these few years? Because they give you a breakdown on the timelines at the end of the comic. They're doing some world building. And then, like you said, this issue, it completely changed pace, but it was to explain what we've been seeing.
Yeah, they've got some text features at the back of the first two kind of explaining how they came up with the idea and stuff. Because this is Charles Soule and Scott Snyder doing the writing.
Very good writers.
Yeah, and there was some aspects of this where they clearly got a little indulgent and stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that. But they also referenced Lost as one of the kind of conceptual or storytelling touchstones.
Yes.
And I can totally see that kind of aspect in storytelling, because like every issue has had a flashback on one of the people who's in this team that's going into the U.S. for the first time in 30 years.
Exactly. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
You know, and there's aspects of the story where it's like almost, I don't say cliche, but standard, you know, lost on an alien planet sort of a thing mixed with a post-apocalyptic twist or whatever. And then cut to, well, this is who this person was, you know, 3 months ago when they got recruited or something. There's almost, I don't say a by-the-numbers aspect to that, but the execution is solid.
Very much so, because it's very Lost-like in that aspect. They executed it very well because you could make it feel so cliched and boring, and it wasn't. It's really what Lost did that was kind of game-changing, you know, the mystery, but along with the characterization. By doing the flashbacks, and you really started to get to know the people, and you cared about them. And so they're starting to do the same thing here. It's harder to do in, you know, 22 pages roughly, but for the page that they're given, I feel like they're doing a good job.
Yeah, I think so. I'll admit the whole concept of the spiral, I'm not too crazy about that, but that's where they're going and stuff. I'm expecting at the center of that spiral is whatever is emanating the force field that encapsulated the you know, the sky wall that encapsulated the U.S. or something.
Yeah, probably something like that.
And no doubt the closer you get to it, the wackier things are going to be, and they're already pretty wacky on the edges.
Yeah, because you have, you know, without spoiling very much, you have time things, you have wall stuff that's going on, you have a world, you know, virus that's broken out all over the world where it could potentially kill millions, if not billions. And so you're having all these things play on each other. And they're doing it very well, and they're doing it in an entertaining fashion to where it's hooking me. Now, this issue, I would say, is very pivotal and key in explaining where the first two issues, which were really cool, why that's happening and what's going on. But you got to be very careful when you're reading this. You can't just skim over it because there's a lot of info dump done in a good way.
Yeah, there's a lot coming out in this. They are good about realizing they've got to answer questions while putting new ones out there.
Yeah.
It's a question of, is it going to be a treadmill like it sometimes Lost tended to be, or is it one where it just stalls out or something like that? It's easy to do this kind of a show or story or comic or whatever wrong. They seem to be doing it well.
Yes.
And I'm not surprised. I mean, these are solid writers, and they've thought about it for quite some time.
I would agree. And knowing these writers and looking at these names, I can almost guarantee you Scott Snyder's is the scripter. And Charles Soule, with the work ethic and the amount of material they can crank out, is the writer, you know, right? We have a plotter, you have the guy.
They actually mentioned that sort of a thing in one of the text pieces.
Oh, okay. I probably didn't read that one. So.
And what it said is, at first, they were going back and forth, you know, on the first two issues or whatever, but then it got to where it's like, this is going to go slow. So basically, they talk, they hammer out the basic idea, you know, at a plot level or whatever for an issue. Snyder will take, you know, either even or odd numbers, and Soule will take the others.
Oh, so they're actually going back and forth.
They're both working on the plot and the story, but the actual script, they're alternating.
That's really cool. Ah, all right. So now, can you tell which writer's writing which one?
Really, the third issue is where they started with that, and I forget. They flat out said in one of the text pieces, I just forget.
Because this issue feels very different, and so I don't, that's why I'm like, huh.
Well, and again, I think it's the first of which that they had done that. Before, they were literally co-writing it. Now they're kind of co-plotting and alternating the writing.
Yeah, because I imagine if they did everything together, it would really slow it down.
And that's what they were realizing.
Yeah. Now, the art in here is amazing because you got Giuseppe Camuncoli and now Danielle Orlandini. I don't know who that is, but I know Giuseppe and he's really good. He, you know, did really great work at Marvel. And then Matt Wilson on the colors. He's a great color artist.
Well, and there's a ton going on in these pages. There is no skimping on detail or background stuff, and I appreciate that.
No, every page has a ton of detail. And sometimes I was almost surprised with the amount of detailed artwork that was in here. Like, I'm looking at, like, about two-thirds, you know, probably like, oh, a page after the middle section. You know, you flip the page after the middle, and just the amount of detail that went into that two-page. It's not really a splash because there's panels in there, but there's just a lot of detailed work, even in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is just impressive because you just don't see that unless it's photo referenced art, typically.
Yeah, they definitely have spent the time figuring out where they want to go with this and stuff, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
This is one where I enjoyed the read quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
but it's just not squarely enough in my wheelhouse for me to think that I have to add this to my reading.
Gotcha.
It's certainly under consideration.
Oh, okay. So it may add, but you're not, you know, dead sold on it yet or dead set to buy it.
At this point, I'm not planning to, but I could possibly be talked into it if after some time people say, oh my God, it really is that great.
Yeah. Okay. I know what you mean. And what's weird with this, I've been testing with things and just something weird with myself, reading things as single issues versus as trades. This book is one of the odd ones that I think it reads well as a single issue or as a trade. It hooks my memory enough that I remember what happened the previous story, which means it was written very well,
mm-hmm.
and I'm enjoying it. But I think if you had that big, meaty trade, it's going to read really awesome, you know, just the flow and not having to wait. And so I think really you can enjoy it either way, which is kind of tough to do with books today.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciated getting the answer to, again, how all this happened so quickly in this issue that if I hadn't gotten that would have frustrated me.
Yeah.
I do have a few other lingering questions that I don't see on the horizon as being either asked or answered, but I'm really curious about.
Okay.
Like, what happened to Alaska and Hawaii?
You know what? I was thinking about that too, because that's not mentioned here, and we're not even seeing it on the maps. Did they just secede? Who knows what's going on?
Were they sealed off independently too?
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah.
So, to me, that's the sort of a thing that we're talking before about how, you know, you do an arc and you need a breather kind of a thing. That's what they could do for those breathers.
That's really cool. I could see them doing something like that and be kind of fun. I would like to see.
So,
now, I see this as something that they could be going on, honestly, if they wanted to, for 60 issues, but I don't think they will.
This has definitely got long-term potential.
It does. And that's where I'm like, I'm hoping they do 60 issues, but just knowing Scott Snyder and he's a busy guy, Charles Soule could do this and, you know, 8 other projects. But I don't know if he can do this for that many issues, but I'm hoping he does because I'm really enjoying it.
I would like to get a sense for how long they think this is going to play out.
Yeah, and that hasn't been mentioned yet. So as of now, we just don't know.
That would be one of the things that could influence, do I pick it up or not?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if a longer or shorter run would get me more likely to pick it up, to be honest.
Yeah, because with you and your reading habits now, it may be 12 issues. You're like, oh, I could do that. And I don't have any kind of long-term commitment. But if it's more like a saga type thing, that may be, do you want to put in 5 years? You don't really know.
Yeah, the flip side is if it's only 12 issues and we're, a quarter of the way through that length, you know, do we really feel that there's going to be a solid, a deep enough story, you know?
Yeah.
There's like no right answer.
Yeah, this does not feel 12 issues to me, but, you know, we've seen different things happen, so who knows?
Yeah, this to me feels like we're maybe halfway through the pilot episode of a TV show, a two-hour pilot episode.
I would agree. That's what it feels like. So and it feels like the world is so rich that there's so many things they could do here. And I'm just excited to see this. And then, you know, we could spend, and this is just me talking, 3 or 4 trade paperbacks worth of material or 4 trade paperbacks on this United States story, and then deal with another 4 or 5 on the world and what's going on there, or, you know, have a spinoff on Hawaii or Alaska, what's going on there, because that started with what's going on in the world. And I want to know, you know, what happens with that. I mean, I know why they went here for the cure, but that's still to be addressed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I could see a couple of different ways they could address it, too.
Yeah, so I'm just, this is right in my wheelhouse. I like stuff like this.
I definitely think there are people that would eat this up, absolutely. If you like Lost, this is, I think, what a lot of people are wanting out of Image.
Yeah.
I just tend to be more Capes and Cowls kind of a guy. This was really good. I did consider, do I want to get it? It's just at this point, yeah, I didn't pull the trigger on it.
All right, cool.
I did go with a B+ on this. I thought it was solid execution, and I think the first issues were even better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Believe it or not, we tied on this one. I gave it a B+ as well, because I think issues 1 and 2 were definitely A material, and this one I think was just a step below that, even though I feel like we got more meat as far as the explanation of why, what's going on in 1 and 2, but we had to pull back to explain that this almost felt like it was taking a little bit of a breather.
Yeah, I think they had to slow down a little bit to give us a little bit of that explanation and such.
Yeah, so this is like the third issue for it to be in a B+ category. It tells you that it's a good title.
Well, and I think there's also this being the first where they've kind of changed up the writing duties a little bit. It's going to take them a little bit to get into the groove and really work that out. So it could be that in a couple issues they really hit their pace on this and it goes pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm really enjoying this. Like the stuff that Scott Snyder, the only thing that worries me is Scott Snyder, not him being a bad guy or a bad writer. You know, he did Witches over at Image and it came out. It was really good, but ended really quick. I think he gets busy at DC. And I'm trying to think, he did something else that was kind of independent. I can't remember the name of it. That was shorter over at Image. But my concerns is, you know, DC's going to have their 5G thing. If he gets tangled up in that a little bit, I can definitely see this title being affected if he's scripting on this as well as having to write Justice League or Batman again or whatever, you know, that they're going to put him on.
It'll be interesting to see how this is selling after it gets out of kind of the honeymoon period. Maybe it's profitable enough for him that it takes the higher priority than doing stuff over at DC. You never know.
Yeah. Hey, not to kill you with numbers, but how did it do for the issues 1 so far? I think you should have those numbers, right?
I should. Give me just a second, and all right. I will...
I'm testing your Excel abilities right now.
Let me pull that up and see if I can find that. I didn't have that spreadsheet open.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. It's a fair question. I'm actually curious, because it's one of those things with an Image title, it really depends, you know, if it continues or not.
Exactly.
The first issue, I think, sold 78,558 units, and this
holy
second
mackerel.
Issue dropped by 58.24% down to 32,806 units.
Wow, that's a Marvel drop there.
That's a staggering drop, yeah.
Wow. Well, that was amazing for the first issue, 78,000, but, I mean, it's still solid with number 2, but that was a big drop. Holy mackerel.
But it may be that people are saying, let me sample the first thing to determine if I want to get the trade.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, when we talked about that last time, you know, Image talking about going to the trades, you know, OGNs, but it seems like a lot of Image readers, not all of them, but a lot of them, they sample the first issue. If they like it, they wait for the trade paperback, and then there's a bump on issue 6, but then it kind of trickles right back down, or issue 7, I should say. It's kind of like this weird thing. You see this bump where the new trades come out, because people are jumping on and off the singles or going trade only back and forth, you know?
Well, and it's fine if you want to get the trades and stuff, but there is a point where if not enough people get the issues, there's not going to be a trade.
Exactly. That's the danger to the thing. And so that's what I think we're starting to experience a lot with not just Image books, but a lot of books. Like I was looking at your numbers that you have up, the Mail Report stuff on your website.
Mm-hmm.
I put a link to it on the Slack channel. And I was noticing, I just did a search for Image. I sorted by them. I was like, man, there's a lot of books in that, what I call danger zone, you know, like they're really not printing that many. And they're in the top 300 or so. But
the danger zone takes a different level at different publishers. And really for an Image book, is it worth the creator's time?
Yeah. Is it worth doing that? And are they going to make it up on the trades? Who knows? I guess the writer knows.
I mean, there are many ways it could be worth their time, either just flat out financially, they're making money on it, or in terms of they've got something they can market to Hollywood and they think they've got a lead on that or something like that. There's a couple of different ways beyond just is it making money that it could work for them. Maybe it's a passion project or something, and as long as it's basically breaking even, they think they'll make the money on the trade, they could be good with that.
Very true.
Others, yeah. If they're not making the bank on the issues, maybe they can't afford to wait for the trade.
Yeah, that's true. It all comes down to the writer and their financial ability and what they're able to handle. If I'm a writer who can only do one project and that book's not making enough, I might just take the work for hire job because maybe it comes with benefits and at least I get a guaranteed salary.
I think it's also more on the artist than the writer, because the writer could do a book and two or three other books easily simultaneously.
Artists get one.
Yeah, two if they're lucky and they're fast.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things I noticed. Kirkman, you know, he writes way, way ahead. But on his last few books, the art's been kind of, you know, so-so artists, you know, not what I would call great artists. Walking Dead was probably the best art out of all the Kirkman books. But it's people who can keep a schedule and crank out and actually, you know, draw ahead, I would say.
Yeah, you need artists that can come out on a regular basis. And I think that's some of what is mandating a lot of these titles having those kind of skip months or whatever, is they just need time to get the schedule back in alignment.
Yeah, I almost wish they'd go to that. I keep talking about this. It's never going to happen. But, you know, like, let's say I am, and I'm trying to just pick an artist. Who was the artist on this? I forgot. Cameron Coley. So I'm Cameron Coley, and I'm a co-owner on this book. But, you know, I get to issue 6. And we have a fill-in artist that we just kind of, you know, hire as a work for hire to do a couple issues, because that gives Giuseppe enough time to take a vacation, get a breather, you know, just get his mind right, and then he can come back in and write it. I think there's artists who would be willing to do that. I think the writers would be fine with it. And the question is, readers, you and I don't think I'd mind, because I'd realize, hey, the guy needs a break. And number two, I'd be like, it doesn't kill the story momentum where I'm not getting an issue for 3 months.
I think it comes down to who is the kind of fill-in artist, and that's whether it's creator-owned or not. If it's something that is jarringly different stylistically.
Yeah, it might be weird.
And you can make it work story-wise. If they decided to tell some other tale of what's going on, say again, in an undiscovered country, that's a different character, a different place, or something like that. If you wanted to flip back to what's happening, say, outside the U.S. or what's happening in Alaska or Hawaii, that gives you the opportunity to do a different artist and art style there without it impacting the flow of this story.
Yeah, and it almost justifies a different art style because, mm-hmm. Hey, this is a different thing and people will be completely okay with that, I think.
So there are ways you could do it. And if you wanted to stay within the confines of this geography, tell it from the other point of view of the Americans.
Exactly. The Americans, or you can even do one with those Mad Max looking people.
Exactly. You do that and it suddenly also justifies a different art style.
Exactly. So that's the kind of stuff where I'm looking for, like, a creative way where they can do stuff like that. But, you know, Image is kind of like the Wild West, so I don't see it really happening.
Really, I think these days, you know, you've got to have artists that can not only get the book done in 4 weeks, but can work just enough ahead that gives them the time to either get sick, have vacation, or, you know, who knows, maybe even take on side project or two once in a while.
Exactly. Do a cover for DC or Marvel just for extra cash.
Exactly.
Something like that. Hey, by the way, have you read anything good over this last week? Or?
Let's see. I read most of the stuff. I held off on one book, and I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Power Rangers was good stuff. Nightwing I liked.
Do they still have the team in Nightwing?
They are still doing that, but they're getting towards Nightwing back on track.
Okay, I keep reading the solicits. As soon as they're gone, I'm going to try it out again.
Yeah, I think you still have a few months to wait.
Yeah.
and Legion. Legion was good.
Oh, yeah. Legion. All right, cool. Yeah, I did actually read the Legion. I did enjoy that. And I read most of my books, and, you know, there was some good stuff. I'm still enjoying most of the mutant stuff. I'm ready for Fallen Angels. I think that's wrapping up. I'm done with that one. But I was happy to hear one thing about this whole X-Men thing that's happening. So we have the whole Dawn of X, and, you know, we came out with the 6 books. And in the back of the books, there's almost like a checklist. Mm-hmm. So you feel like, oh, I should need to read all these. But Hickman finally came out. He said, you don't need to read all the books because they're coming out with, like, you know, now like 9 or 10 books. He's like, they're not all going to be critical to what's going on, so read what you want to read. So I was kind of happy that he came out and said that, because now I don't feel obligated to read all of them.
Yeah. No, that's smart.
I don't feel like I'm going to miss anything, because there are key ones that I'm really, really enjoying. And then there was a few, like Fallen Angels. I'm like, man, I didn't want to read this, and I feel like it didn't impact it very much.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if we see the sales really drop off on those.
Yeah, yeah. So as far as I know, Fallen Angels is done at 6, but then they're going to be spinning off some new stuff. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it makes sense. Cool. The one I decided to hold off on reading is that Crisis on Infinite Earths Giant.
Oh, you held off? Why?
One, because I've already watched the whole Crisis stuff on the CW.
Okay.
Got the second episode of that up, I think, already. And it's going to be another month before the second part, second comic comes out. So I figured I'll wait and read the two back-to-back.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So that, and I was running a little tight on time. I was doing some other stuff this week.
Yeah, and that's a big meaty book, which we'll have a big meaty one next week to review, I'm sure.
Yeah, those 100-page giants, they take a little time to get through.
I know. When I got it and I pulled it out of my shipment from Calbunga, I was like, oh, that's a big tome. Mm-hmm. It's a trade paperback to review, plus some.
To think they used to do 100-page giants for $1.
Yeah, it's like, holy mackerel. Now it's like, forget it. What was this? Was this $9.99? $9.99. Yeah, that's a big book.
that's. So looking forward to reading it. I just figured it made sense to not have a month gap between two issues.
Me too. Hey, one other thing I was going to ask you about. This is coming out after, you know, the cutoff. I'm going to send people a reminder on the previews spotlight on the Slack one more time to get them to get in their clips. But one thing I was going to ask you on the, did you see what people were talking about on the Slack channel when they were talking about how manga, I don't know how to say it, how they sit there and they come out with this a list, like let's say there's 10 comics inside of a book, and the readers actually pick which ones they like, ranked 1 through 10, and they treat the writers almost like you're in the major leagues because you're a good writer based on readers voting in there, and you get paid a lot of money to write stories. Or you can actually get demoted into the minor leagues if you're not writing a good book and not make as much money. I thought that was like a really cool concept.
Yeah, I've known they've done that for a while. I think I even mentioned it a couple of years back on the Mayo reports and stuff. It's very much, you know, they do it as an anthology, and there's a postcard kind of a thing to, I'm sure you could do it online now, to basically rank how you thought everything was doing. And obviously they want to keep their readers happy. So if stuff's working, it'll get a better spot, you know, further forward in the book or whatever. If it's not working out, it'll fade to the back and then drop out as other things crowd it out.
I mean, what a novel concept. I mean, I wish we could do that with our stuff. It'd be so cool, I think. You know, just instead of waiting for retailers, which, you know, retailers can be manipulated a little bit with like incentive covers and stuff. But if readers were actually sending a little voter thing to let DC and Marvel or whoever know what we really like, I think that would be really cool.
The key difference is they're doing it as a like weekly or whatever anthology that's literally the size of a, you know, a phone book or whatever sometimes.
Oh yeah, like a 2080 but thick.
So you can't vote with your wallet because you're picking the whole tome up, whether it's one story or six of them that you like.
Yeah, very true.
Whereas
very true.
Since we're selling things individually, they can tell, do people like Aquaman better than Batman or Batman better than Aquaman based on just how they sell.
That's very true. So completely different. We vote with dollars. They vote with a little card.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just like that concept. That was really cool.
I do think if the companies were better about, and creators better about getting tangible, actionable feedback from the readers, they could cater better to that audience and do better versus just trying to guess what people want.
Yeah, because right now it does feel a little bit like almost like a guess, or I you know, hate to say anything bad, but like, not to make it sound bad, an editorial is going to say, hey, we're going in this direction. Who wants to write it? And that's not necessarily the best thing, because maybe the market wants X, Y, and Z, and they're going A, B, and C. And they could increase their sales maybe if they're giving us X, Y, and Z, but they don't really know what we want.
I think these days, not knowing what the readers want is both very easy to have happen and very surprising to have happen.
I would agree.
It's one thing if you're, you know, individual creator or whatever, but when you're Marvel and DC, you've got potentially, you know, interns you could have that literally their job could be to listen to podcasts, go hit the blogs, the news sites, whatever for comics, generate what the buzz is. Hell, you could even automate this with sentiment analysis and stuff like that, and get a sense of, are you getting generally good or bad feedback on your properties?
Yeah, there's heat around this thing or this type of thing. Readers like this. Boom, boom, boom. And they could almost steer the entire ship in different direction from maybe where they were planning on going. Because it seems like a lot of times they almost are directionalists with what they do.
Yes.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. They could basically do kind of that heat rating of what's got people talking about it, good, bad, or indifferent, but then take it a step further and do sentiment analysis on, yeah, people are talking about it, but they hate it, or people are talking about it and they love it,
yeah,
and react accordingly.
Yeah, like with Dawn of X and Batman, for example. With Batman, there's heat on both sides. There's people who really loved it and people who really hated it. That means it's a polarizing title. Maybe you don't put a writer on your top-selling book that's polarizing. That might not be a good thing.
Or maybe it's, you know, figure out if it's polarizing because of the writer, because of the artist, because of the story.
Yeah.
Depending on that, you either want to change the story, change the writer, or, you know, whatever.
But exactly.
There's data you can use to drive these decisions.
Exactly.
And when you're as big as Marvel and DC...
No excuses.
You've got more options than if you're a small publisher.
Yeah, if you're a writer Image, or if you're Oni Press.
Frankly, I think there's a couple of writers at Image that if a few of them were to band together and stuff, they could find the right person to go do this sort of analysis for them, and it could be a just complete game changer.
Yeah, and that would be really awesome. So I'm excited for our future.
Yeah.
I think 2020 is going to be a good year.
I certainly hope so. Certainly hope so. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next time as we discuss Wonder Woman 750 from DC, Atlantis Attacks number 1 from Marvel, and Deja Thoris number 2 from Dynamite Entertainment.
The show notes and form for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.